Hi, everyone. I'd like to welcome Dawn Sutter-Mizell from Agoraphone to the podcast. Dawn is a music supervisor that's based here in New York in Brooklyn and works on a lot of amazing projects, primarily in advertising, but also in TV and film. So first of all, thank you so much for taking the time to have a conversation with us, Dawn.
No problem.
Great. And why don't we start with, you know, why don't we begin from the beginning? Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came into the business of music supervision.
I came about it in a roundabout way. Well, maybe actually it was pretty direct. I came about it from the music side, so I was a writer at CMJ back in the early 90s, and I worked there for 6 years, writing about music when people cared to read that particular magazine, and it was kind of influential at that point. And then I didn't want to be a writer anymore. It just was boring and maybe got a little dull.
Right.
I think I said I ran out of adjectives. I just couldn't, you know, CMJ was primarily just reviewing records. I would get to do a few interviews, and so it became kind of a rut. So
right.
Then I moved on to doing publicity, which also wasn't right for me. And some of this is just finding the right job for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I wanted to move on from that, and I couldn't decide what to do next. And I remember sitting down with a friend, and he said, well, why do you do the things that you've done so far? What do you like about them? And what I liked most about them was that I was able to take smaller bands that people hadn't heard of before and expose them to a bigger audience. And this seemed like the right venue for that. So I had a friend who had worked at an ad agency, a friend of a friend, and we started talking, and she was doing this freelance and had sort of started a company, but it was really just her at that point. And so we started working together. So Bess really started Agoraphone, and I joined in a few months afterwards, and 16 years later, here I am.
And, you know, in those 16 years, the industry has evolved quite a bit in terms of the perception a lot of people have of music supervision and putting music to messaging or music to entertainment. And I think that when you were beginning Agoraphone, that the business was not really very fully formed. I mean, it was not something that a lot of people were looking at as an important component of the business in comparison to the way everybody looks at it today. Music supervisors are held in high esteem and they're extremely important in the industry. Whereas at that point, it could be a struggle sometimes to get people to really get behind what you were doing, especially on the artist side, right?
Right. Well, definitely on the artist side. I think that Beth's story actually illustrates the importance of the job and its trajectory the best, in that, like, she was a copy editor at Wyden and was just the girl who knew a lot about music, and that she convinced them to, you know, turn that into her job. There wasn't a position there for a music supervisor.
Right.
So I feel like, you know, there's the involvement that in that direction, but then there's also, like you said, so the reason why we came together is she had worked at this ad agency and she knew a lot of people in the ad world, and then I had worked in music for so long, I knew a lot of bands and labels and managers and some publishers, so our knowledge kind of complemented each other, and so we started working together, and my job was primarily to reach out to labels, bands, managers, and get music in so that we would have it on hand when we needed it. And it was not the easiest sell back in 1999 or even the early 2000s. So there's been a huge shift in that, although I did just get an email from a band saying they weren't into corporate bullshit. So it still surveils, and I'm super psyched that people have their limits. It's great.
Well, it's good that people have their limits, but in this day and age, I think limits are somewhat of a luxury because, I mean, this is my opinion. You could totally disagree with me on this, but in my opinion, is limits are a luxury when you're living in a world where there's very few outlets that can help you the way that a good sync can to get your band noticed by the general marketplace. And, you know, one example I can give you, I just got off the phone with Steve Smith from Dirty Vegas, so, you know, it's fresh in my mind. He basically told me that before their Mitsubishi commercial in 2002, they had sold about 1,500 vinyl albums, and then once that came out, they were selling 70,000 units a week. So, you know, I can't say that that's going to happen for every single band that's out there, or even for that many, but it can. And even if it doesn't happen on that level, it's worthwhile to look at it in this world where it's so much harder to get your music out beyond a small group, to look at what sync can do for you, not just in terms of making some money, but also in terms of helping to grow an audience.
Right. I mean, likewise, we put a Wise Guys song, Start the Commotion.
Right.
It's very of a moment in a Mitsubishi ad in 2002, and it started to chart. It was on Billboard after that
right.
spot started airing. And that song, I mean, that record had come out years beforehand. It was totally dead in the water. So it's just sort of interesting how that can happen. I don't know that that happens so much anymore.
Right.
There are certain instances, certain, you know, definitely something that showcases the music and relies heavily on it. And then when we're talking about an ad, brings a certain amount of promotion to it, but I don't know that it always translates into sales.
I think you're absolutely right. I think that there's a few dynamics that go into it, but certainly being able to have something where, you know, if you have something in a show, there's definitely the potential of engagement there. What you do with it afterwards, how big that engagement is sort of a wild card, but it is definitely a component in some way or another of, you know, what I think an artist should be looking at when they're looking at sync from an overall perspective as a component of their career in general.
Right. I mean, I think when I'm looking, my advice to artists when looking at a sync would be to look at it from all perspectives. So, you know, an ad agency might say, oh, hey, this is going to air during the Oscars, so it will be, like, good exposure for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
You should really do this, but we only have $5,000 or something like that, you know?
Right.
And if it doesn't seem like a good deal to you, you shouldn't. You know, there's a, I think, a happy medium of being well, you know, being compensated and exposure,
mm-hmm.
and you know, all of these things need to weigh into it. You may have something that where they don't have a lot of money, but it will be great exposure. It does seem like optimal for those sort of, you know, marketing things that you can do based around that. Or it just may have no marketing ability. You could maybe barely
right.
hear your song in there, but you might be super well compensated for it. So I think that there's a lot to weigh, you know, when you're thinking about whether or not to do a sync.
For sure, for sure. And you know, I think that for bands, there are a lot of things to weigh, but you know, my advice, and of course I'm going to give this advice, at the end of the day, if an opportunity comes your way, make sure you take advantage of it. But let's shift gears a little bit. For people that are already sold on this, there's a right way to engage music supervisors, and there's a wrong way to engage music supervisors. And I think that the heart of what I say to people, and I say this again and again like a broken record, but really what you need to do to position yourself for success is to position yourself in a way where you are thinking about what the music supervisor's needs are. What are their individual needs? For example, if they're working with an advertising firm, you know, what clients are they working with? What have they done in the past in terms of the firms, in terms of the brands, so that when you're looking to engage with them, whether it's a DIY, whether it's through a rep, whether it's through a publisher, you're doing it in such a way where your sort of goals in your mind is oriented towards helping that person to solve a problem more than you are than saying, okay, I'm just going to get my music out there and hopefully they'll like it.
Right. I mean, I think it's important whenever dealing, especially with music supervisors, I'm sure there are other instances which this could also apply, but I think it's really important to step back and not be solipsistic about it. Like, you know, while it is your art and your music, or, you know, whether you run a label or you're the actual musician, you're still trying to help someone else, and it's really about them. So if I send out a brief and I say, I'm looking for, you know, a gentle pop tune, and maybe it talks about happiness, don't send me some EDM because it's your priority. Don't send me something that can't fit in my budget that I'm going to get someone excited about and then have to tell them they can't have it. You know, just try to really step back and look at things objectively also. You know, so don't say, well, maybe this would work. You know,
I need
to get a sync for this, so I'm going to send it to them anyway, because essentially what you're doing is wasting people's time. So what you want to do is be thoughtful about what you send. I will go back again and again to somebody who sends me thoughtful responses to my emails. But the people who send over and over again, send something that, like, you know I can't get for that budget, you know, or if they send something that, if they send instrumentals when I ask for a lyrical song, the next time I might not immediately take them off my list, but the next time I send something out, I'm not going to listen to theirs first.
Right, because they're not fulfilling the objective. And I think that that's a key here. If there's a brief that's sent to you, you have to react to it according to what's being asked for. You know, there's a sort of a balance that you have to keep, because, of course, you know, if you're a music maker or owner, you want to get out new music or music that you have a priority for, but there's a way to do that. And you can't expect it to be when somebody's under the gun and they have a one-day turnaround or even less and they're looking for a specific budget. When they're coming to you with that, you have to fill the brief. You have to do what they ask. But there is a time and place later if you want to say, by the way, maybe you'll be interested in this. I've seen some of the things that you've done in the past. And you can send something to a music supervisor, but don't expect them to react to that, just as a sort of a general short note. But on the other hand, the one thing you don't want to do is to say, it's my priorities that I'm going to push this music supervisor, not what their priorities are.
Right. And I think the way to look at it, if you do want to take everything personally, the way to look at it is to say, I'm going to build this relationship with this person, and I, you know, and part of building that relationship is having them feel like, you know, they can trust you, that you know their taste, that you know their work and where they normally go with things, that you understand how to negotiate with them. You know, it's just basic interpersonal relationships as well as organization of what you have to offer. You have to be super well organized and thoughtful about how you present your stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these things where it sounds like a lot of common sense, and it is, but there are a lot of dynamics to it, right? Because, you know, when everybody talks about music, you know, okay, it's usually in a very subjective manner. Some people like this music, some people don't like this music, they like that music, whatever. But when it comes down to music supervisors and their projects, it's again, it's an objective. It's the right tool for the job. And when a music supervisor is coming to you, you've got to just employ some common sense.
I'm trying to think if we have an analogy for that. We used to always speak in analogies. Beth had this great one that was like, okay, so you want to buy a sweater. And you go into a store and you're like, I like that $100 sweater. But you know what? I only want to pay $50 for it.
Well, that's going to make it really difficult to get that $100 sweater. I mean, maybe you can go and find it in a second-hand shop or on eBay, but that's not really the way the world works, you know?
Right, and that's where you get into, like, doing a cover or finding some other piece of music that kind of, another sweater that kind of looks like that, but isn't quite the same.
Exactly. You know, if you can't afford a Cucci sweater, you know, from 1995, like Notorious B.I.G., maybe you can get something that sort of looks like it. But, you know, at the end of the day, the important thing for people to consider is that, you know, you're helping somebody else to fill a requirement that they have for their job so that they can look good to the people that they're working with. They're not there to randomly take music and be your advocate to a group of people unless that music really works for the particular job at hand. And there's a lot of factors that come into it. You know, you have to represent the pricing correctly. You have to represent you have to turn it around correctly. You have to make sure all of the rights are properly cleared, and these are things that I feel like should just be second nature, but they're really not. And people need to consider that if you don't do these things, music supervisors will not work with you, period.
I mean, you know, right now, for instance, I'm working on a job and a song was pitched to me. Great. It's a low budget thing, so I have a very specific, but they only have the master. And I cannot find the publisher.
Ugh.
And, of course, that's one of the, you know, I pitched it because I thought, well, okay, I'm going to, they had told me that a certain company owned the publishing. So I had reached out and hadn't heard back. And I was like, I'm going to pitch it anyway. And now it turns out they don't own it. And now I have no publisher. And they have no idea who the publisher is. And it's a huge mess.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's like, it's one of these things where at the end of the day, they put you in, the worst thing that you can do is to put somebody such as yourself in a bad position where now you've got to scramble to try to fix this situation.
Right. So now I've passed that on to my client. They like it. They're presenting it to their client, but they have no information about it. You know, they're going to present it. They really like it. We don't know how much it's going to cost. We don't know if it's within their budget. Likely isn't.
Right. And now you've got all
and so
these
now
wild
cards. I look bad, they look bad. And, you know, the whole idea is that we're supposed to know what we're talking about. So, you know, I think that especially when you're talking about maybe a rep or a label, when you are presenting something that you only own half of for something that's a very specific budget, recently, I was doing something for a very small budget, and people were sending me covers of huge songs because they own the master of it. And I was like, well, I was thinking to myself, well, how dumb do you think I am? Or maybe how dumb are you? I don't know. You know.
Right.
But obviously, this can't work.
On my own sync rep side, believe me, I've had people that have come to me and they're like, hey, Mark, I've got this really cool cover of blank. And I'm like, I don't even want to look at it.
Right.
Because I don't even want to hear it. And I mean, that's what you do as a good gatekeeper before you go to the music supervisor. It's like, I don't even want to go there because you didn't think this through. Like, I'm glad you did it. But, you know, if you've got a song like Orange Blossom Special and you haven't cleared the rights, or, you know, you expect me to do all of that heavy lifting, I'm not going to even consider a song like that unless there's some big payday there. And is there going to be a big payday for a cover of a really famous song? you know, maybe, right? I mean, like if you take an example, like I'll take Sympathy for the Devil, right? If somebody wants to use Sympathy for the Devil, they're going to have to pay a lot of money for it. It doesn't matter what the usage case is. You know, it's going to be a lot of money. However, if there's a cover of it, it'll be less than using that master, significantly less, because the Rolling Stones, their masters, are going to cost an enormous amount of money. However, the publishing is still going to cost a lot of money. Not as much, but you've got to be prepared for that. You have to have done your homework in the first place, so that when a music supervisor reaches out to you for whatever reason, you are able to then come back to them and say, okay, I've done my homework on this, and this is the situation with it. It might not be 100% there. I have to go back to the publisher, but this is the conversation I've had. At least that gives the music supervisor the power to say, you know what, why don't you go ahead and see and get back to me, rather than saying, oh, yeah, I've got this really great copy of Sympathy for the Devil that was done that you could use in this particular show or this particular ad. And then it turns around later, you know, the Stones haven't given their approval, and that's the end of that.
Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's as much as knowing who they are and kind of being on the same page as your publisher, or, you know, just having a relationship. And these things go wrong all the time, and I'm surprised at how how difficult it is for people to kind of get on the same page sometimes.
Yeah, and it really does seem like it's fairly simple. I mean, the mechanics of all of this stuff, to go from like point A to actually getting something signed and putting it in a particular ad or you know, some kind of visual media, and there's a lot of mechanics that go on behind the scenes in terms of clearance, in terms of paperwork, etc. But, you know, the actual main points that you have to be aware of here seem to be pretty simple. You know, you represent the pricing correctly. You make sure before you bring it out to anybody that it's either a one-stop and everything is cleared, or that you've done your homework and you and the publisher know exactly where you stand, so that you can represent things and give the music supervisor the choice or the ability to say, okay, I'd like to make my decisions based on something that's, you know, a fairly good amount of information. Or, you know, I can make an intelligent decision.
Right. I mean, it goes back to what you were saying before, which is, I want my life to be easy. So, you know, I recently was working on a job and I needed something to be cleared very quickly. And so I sent out an email, which I usually only do when I have very specific needs, parameters.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I send out an email if I'm looking for a very specific lyric, or if I have an extremely limited budget. And so I sent out something, I had a limited budget, so I kind of, you know, not fully pre-cleared everything, but I had, and I said, this is a super fast turnaround, I'm going to need everything to be able to be cleared within this time frame, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I lay all that out. My client says, oh, we like this song. So I go to my contacts and I say, I have to get this cleared. And they tell me 30 minutes before my client is presenting to their client, they tell me, oh, there's another publisher involved. We didn't realize. And that's the publisher telling me that, right? So it all worked out, but like, these are the things that sort of send panic straight into your heart, like as a music supervisor. Oh my God, you know. So anything anyone can do to make my life easier is so important, especially with ads, the turnaround is so tight. So if someone is in another country, you know, I need to know, okay, well, that publishing goes through, you know, EMI Germany, and so we have to go to Germany, and so that's going to take extra days, you know? I need to know all those parameters.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, you just have to move on because you don't have the time or the, you know, or the comfort level to take on the risk, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, okay, so moving beyond all of this procedural stuff, before we do, though, before we move on from all of this procedural stuff, tell me, if you were to encapsulate it into, like, say, like, three things, what are the three main things that people really should do? And I'm talking about anybody, label, publisher, producer, DIY, rep, whatever, to make your life easier.
Know their catalog. Know, organize their catalog so that it's easy to find things and get them to me quickly. Know everything about it. And just be organized, I think, generally speaking. Those are the main things. And don't, you know, because that organization is going to mean that you don't pitch me things that don't work, that don't,
right.
that don't creatively fit what I'm looking for, don't, you know, monetarily fit what I'm looking for. So if you're organized, that's really the key, you know, and being respectful of my time.
I think that's very solid advice. And, you know, I guess my next question is, moving on from the sort of procedural stuff that we were talking about, that's extremely important. Now let's talk a little bit about the music itself. Where do you find music?
We find music everywhere. So we have four people on our staff, and we all do our own searching, but there is one person who is kind of in charge of the library, and it's her job to really reach out to, like, tons and tons of people. But basically speaking, we get music from reps, labels, publishers, bands themselves, managers, sometimes lawyers.
Right.
And when we're looking, we're combing blogs and, you know, Bandcamp and just generally trawling the internet looking for what suits our needs, you know.
Right. So it's a combination of people that, you know, are your go-to people, as well as, you know, basically, you know, you going through what everybody who's a music lover goes through, but in a more sort of targeted manner, just looking for music.
Right. I mean, I try to keep a lot of stuff here on site. So what I do is I have people send me stuff, and I have, there's a lot that's here already that is organized, and, you know, so I'll go through that. That's my first go-to. And then...
Right.
And then it's reaching out beyond that, you know, searching if I'm doing a lyric search, searching the internet, finding things, you know. It just depends on what I'm searching for, really.
Right. And some of these things that, you know, some of the projects that you have, some of them are going to be, larger companies, let's say, that are going to have a specific idea, or the creative that you're working with has a specific idea. And some of these things are going to be on the order of a sort of an independent film or an independent project where, you know, there is going to be a creative role. Like, I guess, you know, what I'm getting at is that when you're looking at the bigger projects, there is a creative role, but I think it's probably, like, you can tell me what you think. What's more interesting? The working on the really big projects where they say, okay, we have this big budget, we want this song, go out there and get it, or something where you've got to be a little creative and you've got to say, okay, so I've got a small amount of money here and we have the ability to do something really cool. I have to do a little bit of detective work or a little bit of research to, you know, get a good end result.
For me, they both are really great. So, you know, for me, it's really about the challenge. So someone may come to you and have a license for a big song, and it might be challenging. Trying to think of the most challenging license I've done recently. And one of them was I had to license the publishing for an HP spot.
Right.
So I was licensing the Logical song, right?
Right.
And I, you know, we helped them creatively come to that. They had an idea of lyrics that were going to, the whole spot was written around a song, right? We landed on Supertramp, and then they chose the logical song, you know, whatever. So Supertramp, you can't license. You can't license the masters because the two main members have had a falling out.
Oh, well, that makes it easy, yeah.
And only one of them retains the name Supertramp.
Oh, even better.
So Roger Hodgson, who's one of the songwriters, won't allow the masters to be used.
Right.
And they didn't really want to use the master anyway. They wanted to do a children's choir version of the song.
Right.
But, you know, I had to try and license this publishing, and it was really insane. You know, Roger Hodgson has a lot of things that he wants out of a
right.
out of a license, and, you know, including, like, if you're going to do this behind the scenes, it needs to say a very special thanks to Roger Hodgson, and how do you get that to jibe with what you need to do for the other writer? You know, so many. So it was quite a challenge. And to me, sometimes that is really interesting because
right.
you have to, it's on the one hand, it's very right brain, you know, oh, you're just making a deal. It's not a big deal. But part of that is trying to figure out, well, how can I convince him to do this? You know, what is going to
yeah.
be the thing that makes him say, okay, you're right, I'll do this, you know? And there was
right.
a point where I was thinking, this is not going to go through. And so I had to really be creative and figure out how am I going to propose this to them? So I find that kind of thing a challenge. And then I also find the creative thing is obviously just really super fun and trying to
mm-hmm.
find a band that, you know, maybe someone hasn't heard of, but they immediately react to and it feels good to them on their spot. Like, that has its own reward. So I find all of it to be really fun.
I think one of the things that's really cool about being a music supervisor is that not only do you find new music and you're able to turn people onto it, but I think the most important thing and the most interesting thing, and I think it's actually the biggest skill that music supervisors have, is how to handle the interplay between everybody involved in a project to make sure that the best possible music is used within that particular ad, that particular film, TV show, whatever. And that takes a lot of sort of interesting creative management skills because you're going to have, for example, sometimes one person at a brand who has one song in mind, another person at an agency who has another strategic vision in mind. And, of course, you have your own opinion, too. And at the end of the day, you know, you have to manage the interplay of all of those people and make sure that whatever ends up being the result is the best possible result.
Right.
And, you know, that's something that, I mean, do you have to spend a lot of time on that sort of stuff?
I mean, I spend a lot of time on all of it.
Okay, cool. So, you know.
And more, you know. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, okay. So, anyway, I think at the end of the day, it's what's really key here is that a music supervisor's job is something that touches upon finding music, clearing music, also going and, making sure that the people on the other side, whether they're creative showrunners, producers, are aligned in the same manner.
Right. And I think one thing for, you know, to think about, too, and this goes back to sort of how do you help a music supervisor? How do you present your music in a way that's helpful to a supervisor? One thing to think about our job is that, you know, to be a good supervisor, supervision to me is a little bit like, I mean, there are a lot of creative jobs like this. I think designing is a good analogy. But, a lot of people think, oh, I could do that. I could find out what would work on that, you know, movie, that spot. But, you know, we don't work in a vacuum. It's not my decision. As much as I want to say I chose that music for that spot, you know, I didn't choose the music. I gave some suggestions and they chose the music. So the creatives are the ones who are actually making those decisions. And, you know, one of the first questions I always ask people when they interview here is there any type of music you don't like to listen to? And if they say yes, then I know that I can just, like, leave the room now.
Right.
Because, you know, one of the biggest things about being a music supervisor is being able to, you're trying to solve their problem. You're not giving, you know, to some degree, yes, sometimes someone will ask me, well, what do you think? You know, tell us what you think would be great on it. But for the most part, you're trying to solve their problem, and it's not, you have to check your own feelings and thoughts about music at the door, you know?
Right. Absolutely true. And sometimes they may converge where you're like, I really love this song, and I know it's right for it. I'm not just being subjective about it. Great, for the stars align. But you can't be that person every single time. If that happens, great. But you really have to say, like you did, and like I say to people about dealing with music supervisors, you have to put your head in the people that you're working for. That's the bottom line. Otherwise, you won't get a good result.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm gonna end this off with two things really quickly. The first thing is, tell us about some of the interesting stuff that you're working on right now that you can talk about, because I know on the advertising side there's a lot that, you know, it's not possible to talk about.
Right. So, you know, for various reasons, there are always ads that you can't talk about because of restrictions about, you know, what kind of music you licensed, or because they're in the works now. So I have quite a few things in the works right now that I can't really speak about because they haven't aired yet. We just did two Super Bowl spots. So one was Audi R8, which featured some original music, ambient music up front that we did, and David Bowie's Starman on the back end. And then the other was a mini spot for BSSP, which just had original music. So those were super fun jobs. We always have a lot of ads coming in and out. And for me, an ad, loving an ad is a very particular thing because it, maybe I'm jaded, but I need to like love the creative as well
of
as
course.
The music. Like those are my favorite spots are always those ones where it's kind of that kind of sweet spot where you love everything about it. So we always have a bunch of ads going on, which is really fun and exciting, but kind of changes day to day. And it's kind of the little challenges about that. And then the other things that we have going on that are really exciting are we are working with Wyatt Cenac on his CISO show called Night Train. And that required us to work with his DJ, Donwell, and find music that was licensable, that he could play, that fit his palette and, you know, would work for both him and Wyatt. And we created the theme song for it, which was really interesting on a multi-level thing because Wyatt had a friend who makes music and he wanted to use his music, but that person only is a hip-hop guy who only deals with samples. And all of his music is sample-based, and none of it was affordable. So what we did was we found a song that they could use as a sample for the theme song.
Right.
So that was pretty fun. And then we're working on a new animated series that's won't air until 2018, but that's kind of exciting for us, too, we like it when we get to mix it up. There's a balance of film, TV, and ads. That's always good.
With that, Dawn, I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time out with us today to speak to us, and I hope that we'll have the opportunity to have you as a guest again soon.
All right. Thanks, Mark.